Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 118 is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So here we are.
Dude, where have you been?
We've had some technical difficulties, some other difficulties, but we're back. We're back with a vengeance.
I wish we had a vengeance to be back with. I was actually thinking about this. I feel like if people like listen routinely, they're like, oh man, they've taken a break for 2 weeks. They've got to come back with some awesome content.
Or maybe they don't come back at all.
Ah, you think anyone thought that?
I don't know.
Maybe.
Maybe, could be. So, what are we? Beginning of August.
Mm-hmm.
Local high school, grade schools have started back. College starts back next week for my boys at UGA. Summer is upon us. I think the dog days of summer that's ending soon.
Here we go again, yeah.
So that's all related to the Star Sirius, and we talked about that before. But it has been very, very hot here in Gwinnett County. We've had pop-up thunderstorms. It's super, super green. But I think we've got, probably another month of summer here before fall? When does fall start?
So technically the first day of summer is like September 23rd or something like that.
First day of summer?
Or fall.
Or fall.
Fall.
Okay. So, yeah, basically another month, and we've had a pretty mild summer for us, but beautiful day once again, 75-ish, low humidity. We've had an awesome weekend. I was able to go check out the Dogwood Festival at Piedmont Park in Atlanta this weekend, had some good weather, lots of people, everything kind of getting back to normal, so it seems, except the mask issue. So,
yeah,
let's go there. Current events.
I don't really want to go there, but let's go there anyways.
All right. So I read this morning on Yahoo News, probably a list of 50 companies that are requiring their either employees or employees and patrons to be vaccinated against coronavirus. Delta is one for new hires only.
Okay.
A couple of local restaurants in the Atlanta area. And New York, they are requiring employees and patrons to be vaccinated before they will let them come in and patronize them. The story kind of quotes that they feel so very responsible that they have to do this.
So they're forcing people's hands.
Yeah.
In so many ways, right?
They're fear-based, I think.
Maybe it was a hoax or some garbage I saw on social media, but I feel like the CDC just recently came out and said like that vaccines aren't necessarily super protective for people. Maybe I need to go find that.
I think I heard a rumor about a story that said masks are not very protective. That was kind of the latest that I heard yesterday, unless they are the high-grade medical mask. So, bottom line is it's still a mess out there, and we have no idea what's going to happen. I certainly do not plan for us to go back to curbside. I certainly do not plan for us at the clinic or clinics to mandate masks or vaccinations. I think people should be responsible, and once again, this disease will spread through the population as many have in the past, and you will either get the disease, you will not get the disease, you'll be exposed, you won't be, you'll be vaccinated or not, but it's out there and you cannot run and hide from it. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
So as far as I know, there's no other vaccine that anyone require. Like public schools typically require your child to be vaccinated, but as you
measles,
are
mumps,
a parent, you can certainly sign a waiver that says like, no, I'm declining that for my child, and your child can still go to school.
Right.
So at this rate, what you're talking about with these employment companies or these companies when it comes to employing them, they don't have an option. It's either you're vaccinated or you don't work here. Is that where we're at?
I suppose. I mean, but also, so with schools starting back like it's last week, you started hearing in the news once again, oh my
Instantly.
gosh, 333 cases. Oh, and it just
Yeah, my
so
neighborhood.
sensationalized.
Yeah, my neighborhood blew up. So the kids in Barrow County went back to school 7:30, so that Friday, the last Friday of July. And come Monday, there were already kids that were contacted and told that they need to stay out of school because someone in their class tested positive. So it's yeah, I mean, I'd hate to be a parent right now with how wishy-washy the school systems can be. But where I was going with that is like, yeah, when you're a kid and you're going into public school or I guess any school, they tell you that you need to provide proof of vaccinations, right? Like measles, mumps, rubella, I don't know any others,
Sure.
chicken pox, whatever. So I guess is that any different now that we're adults? But as those kids, parents can sign off and say like, no, I choose my child not to be vaccinated.
Historically, you could, but I don't
Like
know. Moving
now
forward,
there's no option.
are we going to require kids to be coronavirus vaccinated? Well, right now, if you're under, what, 12, you cannot get the vaccine
Right.
per somebody or something. I'm not really sure who decides all these things
Yeah.
once again,
I
but.
don't know. I just feel like the it's kind of like when we talk to our clients, right? Like we require your pet to be current and updated on these vaccines, but yet there's always a little bit of a gray
Always
space.
some wiggle room, yeah.
And I feel like maybe there is gray space, but it's not being talked about, or maybe there absolutely is nothing gray about it. It's so black and white. You're either vaccinated or you're not. And that's the scary part to me personally. Not that I don't believe in science and whatever, because I do, but I don't know. There are, I guess, plenty of people out there that
Still,
are willing to fight the good fight.
yeah, still very interesting everybody's take on vaccines and whether they will be vaccinated or not. And I would say the millennial population, and or the Gen Z population, very skeptical about vaccines. Older than that, the majority of people, my understanding is, have been vaccinated. But yeah, everybody's takes a little bit differently. And I mean, we're still, I don't think a year into measles as a disease that they came up with, the proper vaccine, a safe vaccine, and the rules and regulations of who need to be vaccinated or not. So we're really young into this whole process. I think the Spanish flu, I was reading about that on Saturday. Spanish flu had higher numbers in as far as deaths than current coronavirus deaths, but our population is significantly larger
Sure.
now, almost twice of what it was back then. But anyway, just gosh, the whole coronavirus, the
Yeah, so
COVID-19, we're in 2021.
my whole point about like, oh man, they took a couple, weeks off and their podcast must be like killer now. But I feel like we're eventually going to talk about the same things we always do, right? So,
Blue-green algae
blue
in the
green
summer.
algae, yeah, there's definitely something that in the summer. There's again fires again in California. So the Dixie Fire is now like the second largest fire in California history. So I feel like we talked a lot last year about the fires in Australia, and then we talked COVID, and then fires in California. So it's almost like our information is very cyclical, not
Sure.
intentionally, but I guess that's kind of what's going on out there.
Yeah, so blue-green algae, once again, keep your pets away, keep your livestock away from that nasty-looking algae up along the shoreline of typically lakes. Cyanobacterium, right, that
Cyano, yeah.
is the causative agent. Super, super deadly. I forget somewhat the pathophysiology. Is it more of a liver toxin, neurotoxin, both of
That I
those?
don't recall, but I know it's pretty quick.
Can be super, super deadly. And so, watch out for that. The fires, yes, Georgia here, we typically do not have fires. We typically have a lot of rain, wind storms, trees have fallen over historically. Had a little bit of that going on maybe 2 months ago, but been pretty mild for us.
We always talk about the pet food recalls. There's another big one that happened late July, early August, and that was Sunshine Mills. They voluntarily recalled due to the
Alpha to
alpha, oh gosh,
aflatoxin.
aflatoxin.
Yep.
Yes.
Which is a fungal type of a toxin. Yes.
Yeah.
Large animal primarily, but we see it spill over into small animal foods
yep.
as well.
So, as we said sometime, I guess earlier this year or last year, the aflatoxin or aflatoxin was in some other foods to be above the approved limit or acceptable limit. It's the same thing with these new foods. So again, Sunshine Mills, they have a couple of different like brand names like Triumph, Wild Spirit, Evolve, Nurture Farms. So all of those are, I guess, brands underneath the Sunshine Hills.
Food, we, you know, again, kind of circling back, we're talking about stuff we've talked about historically, but food, small animal food, the food industry is huge, and I cannot keep on top of what's good, what's bad, what's not good. Everybody has jumped into the market.
It's getting way bigger than it's ever been before,
so
for sure.
The pet food industry, my numbers are going to be wrong, but I feel like we were $60 billion maybe 4 years ago, and it's over a $100 billion industry now. Over the last couple of years has exploded. So almost 1.5 times increase. I think those numbers are probably pretty close. But
so it's not just like commercial pet foods anymore. It's now they have these like home delivery pet food things for your pets.
Yeah, all you the fresh foods, all the taste of the wild this, the wildebeest that.
Well, those are still commercially prepared. What I'm talking about is like you sign up for a subscription and they basically bake your dog food and then they deliver it to you just like they would like human products.
Food.
Yeah. So there's a lot of that as well going on. So it's not just the kibbles and bits type food anymore, is
kibbles
what I'm saying.
And bits, kibbles and bits. I'm gonna get me some kibbles and bits. So you sent me a story yesterday, I think, from the LA Times. Hollywood backed animal activist convicted I cut off the whole thing.
For treating pets without
a veterinary license.
Yeah.
And so my ears perked up when I heard this, saw this. My mind immediately went to all of the people and organizations and rescue groups that are trying to save the world via animal rescue. And they're somewhat getting in over their heads and they're doing things they really shouldn't because they are not veterinarians or animal hospitals. And so this story doesn't quite go down that path that I was looking at, but
well,
it's very, very interesting.
It doesn't.
Because this is about Mark Ching, which I feel like I've seen his face before, but he, in this story, is standing next to Shannon Daugherty, who we saw, right, at the
American Humane Hero Dog Nurse Awards.
I think I took a picture across the room of her with some other celebrity, and she's standing next to Mark here. And I mean, basically, he had a pet food shop, the Petsterant. Is this what you were talking about just now, or is this different?
Similarly, but different. So he had this. It's essentially a pet store, a Petsterant. I'm not quite sure if they made food and delivered it out or not, but and then he also had a charity that he threw this store also.
And so the gist of the story is what? He was making recommendations to people. He was coming up with dog foods. He was coming up with homeopathic remedies and recommending that whoever these people were who he was talking to, they would do this versus going the more traditional route of going to an animal hospital.
Yeah, so he describes himself as a fourth generation herbalist and nutritionist, but not a veterinarian.
Not a veterinarian. And so story goes on to read that he is an ex-convict who transformed himself into one of the most prominent leaders in the animal rights community here and abroad.
Well, back in the day, he like went to Asia. He's of Asian descent, right? Ching is the last name. He appears to look somewhat of Asian descent. So he, I feel like, went to Asia and took like videos and pictures of like dog meat and horse meat, and like brought that back. And then that's kind of where his startup happened, from what I remember of him. He very much became this like dogs are not animals person and whatever, and then started all of this. But yeah, to this article's point, like many people in Hollywood or in LA supported him and whatever. But the thing that I find super interesting about him is that the Federal Trade Commission accused the same person, so Mark Chang, of making false or deceptive claims that his herbal supplements could treat COVID-19.
Yep.
And could treat cancer. So not only was he saying this to pets, but he was actually somewhat saying this to people.
Yeah.
Do you remember when COVID, I guess, like relatively had first kind of happened or started? There was another guy that was arrested for his false claims about like, take my supplement because it's going to cure COVID. Do you remember? We talked about that on the podcast. I forget who that was.
Yeah, vaguely remember it. But, you know, we also hear like, what is it? Dinovite?
Dinovite.
That's advertised on a local radio station here that it's the best thing, you know, for any issue, GI, skin in particular. And it's just, yeah, Dinovite. It's awesome. They have all these testimonials. So, yeah, I don't know. You've got to be really careful what you believe, whether you read it on Google, you're hearing it from the person in the store you're buying your dog food from. So he was charged with practicing veterinary medicine without a license, and then six other misdemeanors, one count each of manufacturing and packaging pet food without a license, unlawfully selling products that were falsely advertised, unlawfully selling food that was adulterated. I'm not really sure what that means exactly. And then unlawfully selling food that was misbranded and two counts of false advertising. So he was charged with those, but I think he was only
it's like 12 months and $1,000 fine.
Probation, $1,000 fine. Yeah.
12 months probation.
Smack on the hand.
Yeah, but I mean, to be honest, like hopefully there's also some deeper-seated things, like you can't own a business like this in the future or whatnot. I don't know, but
well, hopefully it's more just publicly, you know, I guess publishing this article, hopefully it will deter other people who are wanting to, you know, get on the bandwagon and jump in and do something like this. They need to think a little.
The thing about this is, and I saw this article, I feel like, on LinkedIn, and Debbie Boone, who is a pretty well-known leader in our industry or consultant in our industry, she made the comment on this article that this happens more than you would ever like to realize. And this is exactly what you were talking about, right? So people start listening to their neighbors who said like, oh, I chopped up some grass and fed it to my dog and it fixed him, or, you know, like any sort of like little piece of misinformation. But so many people are desperate for, I guess, solutions that are inexpensive, I guess, and or sometimes money doesn't matter, but that they believe in and or like they feel convicted about. And it's so interesting to me that coming to the veterinary practice is not always
the source of information. Who do you trust? Who do you believe? And if you have like, if you're a human and you have a medical problem, and it happens to us as well, I'm assuming, right?
But so it's the
you don't
age
always
that
go
we're in. It's
you don't
this
always go to the doctor
overload
or the hospital. You may go to Google and you're going to look
exactly.
And you're going to find an ad for this supplement that's going to cure this uncurable disease, and you're going to spend $19.99 and try to see if it works. So yeah, it's not just the
and there's
the
no one out there
industry
patrolling the information that's on the internet, right? Like they're not saying this is correct information and this is incorrect information, which is where we have somewhat tried to battle for years, like trying to get people to go to credible sources when they're going to look at things for their pet, right? Don't go to some random blogger who's sharing their opinion, like go to someone who has science-backed data. So I don't know, just interesting. It's such a deep, deep issue.
It is. I guess speaking to our clientele, you know, that we serve them and their pets, that the relationship is super important, right? So if they come in and they're going to believe the breeder over our recommendation or what their friend suggested or what the internet suggested, usually they don't stay our clients very long. And it's kind of a mutual departure.
Yeah, for sure. Like there does need to be that trust there, right? Now, granted, clients don't have to take everything that we
correct
say.
It's a partnership.
But absolutely. Yep. It needs to be like, okay, Dr. Miller, I understand your stance there, but I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. You know what I mean?
Sometimes we choose to disagree and that's fine. But
yeah, exactly.
So,
for sure.
All right. So a couple of other just topics that were in the news this past week. North Carolina State put out an article about all of the or the importance of stuffed animals and the difference they made in the recovery of many of their pets in ICU.
This sounds very familiar, doesn't
And
it?
so you had the idea, and I thought it was a great idea, we just never could pull it off, about somehow promoting the stuffed animals to go in with our very sick pets, whether they're surgically sick or medically sick, and maybe the human hugs the pet to get their scent on the stuffed animal, and then it goes in with the pet, and then it actually goes home with the pet, and it's just kind of this beautiful relationship thing. And so that's exactly what this is talking about. And we definitely, not every pet that's in maybe our intensive care area or our surgical recovery area gets a stuffed animal, but definitely we tend to put something in, and whether it's a blanket or a cat bed for a little dog or
Yeah.
whatever the case may be, they
So,
definitely respond to, I'm going to say, something to snuggle up next to.
absolutely. So, years ago, when I thought about doing something like this exactly, the words were hugs for hospitalized pets. And I actually bought quite a bit of the large stuffed animal pet toys, and I very specifically wanted them to be pet toys, right? So they didn't have the hard eyes or that kind of thing on there, in case a dog did decide to have a little bit too much fun and chew it up. And so those toys, even though the program kind of failed, we did end up putting those toys in circulation with pets and that kind of thing. And honestly, we didn't send them home. We just laundered those toys and washed them and then put them back with other pets sometimes.
I
But,
think that's something we could do. We being me tend to like think really big and very complicated, and it all has to work from A to Z, but we could literally just have a basket of these stuffed animals, and the care fund could purchase them. And then every owner that's pet was either hospitalized, again, for a medical illness or a surgical condition, they could go pick one out. That was kind of the
That was
thoughts,
the
right?
theory, yeah. So,
We
like,
always are looking to kind of try to raise money for the care fund, and so
of
that's where it gets
course.
complicated, because we do you have an ask of a donation? Do you not? But I think we should go ahead and do that. We need to just rethink about that and
Sure.
have a little station. And again, the important thing is trying to get the human scent on the stuffed animal. That's going to make the human feel better about their pet being here because there's something, quote unquote, of them with the pet.
Right.
But the pet's going to feel better while they're in the hospital. And then when the pet goes home, happy and healthy, that's kind of a little memento. So, m
Yep.
memento, memento, memento,
I don't know, but yes, I
pimento.
pimento cheese.
So yeah, I think that's a good idea because again, we kind of do that, but I do think getting the client's involvement, would be,
For sure.
mo better.
I have always thought that it would be both beneficial to the human and the pet. The pet, because I don't know, like my dogs, they love to sleep on things, right? So they will sleep on the floor for sure. But if there's a blanket, they will snuggle up with a blanket. If there is a dog toy that my dog is playing with, he will absolutely kind of curl that toy up underneath his neck and he'll lay down and take a nap on it. And so I think the article you're referencing talks about how some of the people that work in this hospital have seen pets take some of their very best naps with their stuffies in their kennels.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
yeah,
So
I think it's a great idea. We
just kind of
can.
rejog, yeah, the memory there, and I do think, yeah, that's something we just need to go ahead and execute here within the next 30 days.
Cool. Let's do it, man.
All right, so there was an article about feline pain that came out, and how do you recognize feline pain, and it's really hard. It's hard enough in a dog, but cats are even more difficult to truly recognize if they're hurting from musculoskeletal pain, such as osteoarthritis or other issues. What, in your opinion, are some of the common signs of pain in a cat? And then we'll kind of go to the dog.
Well, so cats, I try to tell this, like when I see clients in the exam rooms or whatever, and they're explaining differences in their cat. I think every cat is a little different in the sense that, like, if your cat is a social cat and it's now asocial, there's probably something happening. Yep. That may be a sign of pain. If your cat is typically an asocial cat, but now it's trying to be super social, then that may be a sign of pain. So changes
totally
in behavior can be something. Litter box changes. So especially if they have some urinary or some fecal, I guess, rectal pain, they sometimes will associate their pain with their litter box. And so you'll start to see that there's urine or defecation outside of the box. And then I don't know, just
decreased travel, let's say up and down stairs,
yep,
you know, maybe
for
you
sure.
have a multiple level house. You may see that less interaction with people. You kind of said social.
Mm-hmm.
So people or other animals in the household. And then sometimes that's just completely standoffish. Like they're hiding. You cannot find them. And so cats,
Can be aggressors, you know, like they're painful. And so they get aggressive, but most of them are going to be more reclusive.
Yeah, and it's extremely rare for them to vocalize moan or groan or for you to pick up. You might see an increase in respiratory rate.
Mm-hmm.
You may see a decrease in appetite. So very vague signs.
Of course.
They're going to just act like a sick cat.
Yeah,
right?
Which is also very vague.
Which is very vague. Dogs are going to be very similar, but yet you may notice them vocalizing when they, you know, try to rise if they have arthritis, say, in their hips or their knees, or when they go to sit down. But typically, if they are vocalizing, they're extremely painful.
Well, yeah, but I would also think that just naturally the relationship that people are going to have with their dogs versus people are going to have with their cats. And now this is, you know, majority. I definitely realize that there are some cats that act like small dogs, but I do think that the natural relationship that people are going to have with their dogs, they're going to notice a limp, a gimp, a vocal.
So correct. If you're walking your dog, or if you're playing frisbee with your dog, or tennis ball with your dog, or if you have a dock diving dog, you're going to see a big difference.
Yeah. Sometimes dogs also just refuse to eat when they're painful.
Yeah.
So that...
Yeah, so it's just, I don't know, most people are very in tune with their dogs and cats, and anything out of the ordinary would prompt you to get an exam.
Right.
And again, the orthopedic exam is sometimes difficult on dogs, but oftentimes extremely difficult on cats because of just the nature of the beast. So
it's one of those things that we talk about with our front desk staff. If someone's calling and they have concerns, they likely know their pet and their pet's habits better than we do. So if they're concerned, the best thing is to bring it in and have a discussion with your veterinarian on those concerns, you know?
Agreed.
Like, don't ask. A lot of times, like, people will call and be like, is it normal if my cat does this? Well, it could be if that's typical behavior for your cat. But if you're concerned about it, which obviously they should be because they've called, right? Or they are because they've called to ask or inquire. Anyways, long story short, clients are going to know their pets way better than we are.
Give us a good history. Let's do an exam. Let's talk about what we think is going on. Do we agree? Let's talk about what we would recommend as far as working up. Is it lab work? Is it diagnostics? And then let's try some therapy, or let's not try some therapy, and let's see what happens. And so it is not a perfect science, or whatever the word phrasing is, in what we do. Every case is different, and it takes the whole team to kind of try to get these pets better oftentimes. So.
Sure. So I have a question.
Okay.
Have you ever, like, I guess, been on Google, Yahoo, or any social media site, and you see these, like, what I'm going to call clickbait articles? They're like, oh, X number, like, top three things you can do to whatever. Or they always put, like, a number associated with it to
mm-hmm.
entice you. Okay, well, I fell down the rabbit hole the other day on this whole, like, 24 things you didn't know about the Titanic, but will absolutely keep you questioning. So I read through them. Some of them are super weird. I found out
this
that there
all
were
all about the Titanic.
All about the Titanic.
Okay.
Yeah. So I found out that there were, there was only one African American man on the ship.
Okay.
And he was married to a white woman and had two daughters. So the article read that there were only three African American people on the ship.
Him and his
the
two
man
daughters.
And the two kids.
Okay.
Super interesting, right? And then that there were six Chinese people on the ship.
Okay.
And apparently there's, like, a documentary called The Six that talks about the Chinese and how when they got to Ellis Island, they were basically, like, sent right back. Whereas, like, other nationalities and things were not sent away. They were allowed to come in and to Ellis Island and whatnot. So anyways, super interesting.
Chinese were not allowed to immigrate into the U.S.
Yeah, because
saying.
There was, gosh, I'm really bad with history, but there was apparently some like Chinese something something act of
okay.
the 1900s that like Chinese people were not allowed to enter the United States. That fell off, I think, in like the 1940s. But nonetheless, one of the things I found super, super interesting is that there were dogs on the ship. Did you know that?
I did not. I did not see any dogs in the movie.
So I think that is also the point of this article is that the, what was it, 1997? The Leonardo DiCaprio, the Cameron movie. It didn't depict things as factual, obviously, because it's a movie and not a documentary, as they happened. So
it's a good movie, though.
It was a good movie. But apparently there were 12 dogs aboard the Titanic, most of which were held in the first-rate kennel. And so the ship's carpenter was responsible for taking care of them, being to let them go out and exercise them and use the bathroom. Most of the dogs belonged to first-class passengers. So I guess like reading through all of these like 24 different things, there were like first class, second class,
how many people are like 500
class.
People or so on the boat?
Oh no, much more. I don't remember.
1,000?
I don't remember. But nonetheless, there were like truly different levels of people on
sure.
the boat. And so like I think when we were watching the movie, we were obviously seeing first class people. So these dogs essentially belonged to most of them to first class passengers, and they were supposedly very well cared for. There was even a dog show scheduled on the ship for April 15th when the boat sank.
Huh.
Only three of these dogs survived the tragedy. There were two Pomeranians and a Pekingese. And their reason being is that they were so small that they were smuggled onto a lifeboat.
Smuggled onto a lifeboat.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
That's crazy.
So, like, as I think about all the time, right? Like, not that tragedies aren't tragic enough for people, like the fires, the floods in Michigan, all of these things. But like, I always kind of think about the pets.
What
and
about
some
the pets?
Sometimes yeah. the pets and I guess the hotel collapse or the condo collapse
Miami.
In Miami.
Yeah.
So they're not always the first to kind of make the news, but clearly they are there.
Yeah.
Like the Titanic. I never knew in my entire life that there were pets on the Titanic.
The Miami thing, the one cat, right? They did find one cat that survived.
They did, yeah.
And I think that's all I've heard. So I've not
yeah,
really
I
heard
think
about
it kind
it
of, when COVID kind of fell
Resurged.
Back into popularity,
yeah. Yeah.
that story kind of fell out of the news, sadly. But,
well, very cool.
Yeah.
Last thing I have is one of our patients, I was informed, I saw this patient this past week, it's a corgi, and this corgi is one of the top dock diving dogs in the nation.
Oh, wow.
Going into national competition within the next week or two, and I did ask the owner to try to kind of send us some pictures like before, during, and after, just to kind of keep us updated.
Yeah.
And I thought that would be cool to kind of post on social. And so I will not reveal who this is at this point unless she shares some of the information with us, and then we'll ask for permission to kind of post that.
That'd be super cool. But have you ever seen a dock diving event?
I have twice, I think. It's pretty cool.
It's very cool, but I don't necessarily understand. It's kind of like most of the Olympics. I don't understand how they're judged. Like, is it the furthest? Is it the straightest? Is it the biggest splash? Like,
I think it's length, but I don't know like how a German, a corgi compares to a German shepherd. And I'm pretty sure it's dock diving. I know one of our other clients has a lot of dogs,
agility.
You know, that we,
yeah.
she does agility and diving with as well. But, this is just kind of cool because this particular client has had this breed ever since I've known her, and she came to us for a second opinion maybe, gosh, 15 years ago.
That's so crazy.
And I think three or four corgis she's had, but her two-legged kids are, I kind of confirmed this, was asking her about this, they have just graduated college.
Okay.
And for the last couple of years, she and her husband have really gotten into, to this diving thing, this competition.
Cool.
And so, very, very interesting. Yeah. All of the stuff going on around us underneath our noses, and sometimes we have no clue. So.
Yeah. We'll have to maybe have one of our clients or someone who knows a little bit more about dock diving come on and explain to us what that's like. It's kind of like dog shows. You know, I'm not necessarily totally keen on the dog show situation either, because like dogs will, they say, essentially like accumulate their awards until they're at their mastered level.
Yes.
And so I'm assuming that's kind of the same
this
for dock
diving.
This is a
little different. This is, I mean, it is going to be points that you win, but it is more of a direct competition. It's not like you go to 20 competitions with three dogs, you know, and the top dog gets 50 points. And so you just build your points. It's my understanding. So
that's very cool.
But yeah, so all right, we went a little bit long, kind of making up for missing a couple of episodes. We'll try to do better.
If anyone's ever wondering, we're still doing it.
Yeah, we're still doing it.
We do have a jingle. So the jingle was written, or I guess
composed.
We are going to work on some dubbing sound,
the
I guess,
intro,
or
yeah.
voice over the jingle, and then hopefully we'll have that. So it might sound a little bit different in the coming weeks or months. Depends on how fast we can get that done. But nonetheless, check in next week, guys, as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Make sure to follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. Under the resource tab on our website, you can find this podcast, but despite where you're getting it, please make sure to hit subscribe. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.